This AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by Acuron Corn Herbicide from Syngenta, which delivers 5 to 15 more bushels an acre than with any other herbicide. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron Yield Advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and University trials. Dangerous trade. Move to the bean market today. Without much support from the fundamental side of the market, it's really tough to find much reason for bean prices to move higher. But hey, this is AgriTalk. We're going to keep looking for it today.
Live from Sparkle City, USA, via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we'll talk with Craig Turner from Daniels Trading. And right after the news, Varsity Joe Vaklovic from Standard Grain checks in. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Laurie.
All right, Davis, thank you so much. Yeah, corn under some pressure today. Wheat also lower, but off of session lows. And that the wheat market not wanting to follow through to yesterday's solid gains that we saw there, I think it really kind of deflated the rest of the markets today.
Okay.
And you do that to this bean market with the way that it's been trading here of late.
And you get a crappy Macy's Day Parade is what you get.
I think
the deflation.
Yes. I think maybe that's true. Did you hear that they may not even be able to fly the balloons?
Is that right?
I mean, is it a Macy's Day Parade if you don't even have the balloons?
I'm more concerned about the weather, because it turns out that I had a groundbreaking new theory that even USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey had to agree was probably valid.
There is something to that.
Here we are.
Yeah.
The Thanksgiving storm is almost upon us, Chip.
Dude, the reason they can't fly the balloons is because of the weather.
There is something to that.
I thought I just said that. And Brad Rippey from USDA agrees.
I thought you just said the opposite. I don't know where we're going.
You're hearing what you want to, Flory. Yes, the wind.
The winds blowing into New York, and it sounds like they're going to have some trouble. You know, that doesn't make any sense to me. Just take them down to street level and walk them.
You think
they don't have to be up there around the light poles?
Yeah, but you know what? Then you get the beak of Woody Woodpecker, like, kind of hitting people on the tops of the heads as it goes by. And yeah,
well, make room.
That's
make
fun
room
from
for Woody.
Think of the children.
Yeah, right. Okay, good conversation coming up for you today.
Yes.
Craig Turner, we've got a long list of things that we want to go through, and we will be looking for that fundamental factor that might bring a little bit of support into the bean market before the end of the week. All right. Let's get to it. What was moving the markets today?
Chip, recent strength in winter wheat futures turned into some profit-taking, resulting in light price losses. USDA says 53% of the winter wheat crop was rated good to excellent as of November 24. That was unchanged from the previous week. But compared to the week before, ratings of the HRW crop ticked slightly higher, and SRW crop ratings inched lower. The winter wheat crop rated poor to very poor was unchanged from the previous week at 14%. Traders said concerns over dry conditions in Argentina, the Black Sea region, and Australia should help limit selling interest in wheat futures in the days ahead. December hard red futures were 3 cents lower at 4.32 and a half. December soft red futures slipped 0.75 cents to 5.30 and a quarter. December spring wheat fell 4 and one quarter to 4.94 even, Chip.
Yeah, that front month SRW contract, just so to put some perspective on it, the market opened at 5.30 and three quarters, slipped back to a low of 5.25 and a half, and then came roaring all the way back to close back over 5.30. So we did close below the opening range, but it was a high range open, high range close. I kind of like the way that it rejected that move down to 5.25.
All right, I'm marking that a win. Okay. The soft tone in the wheat market also removed some support from the corn market. USDA says 84% of the U.S. corn crop was harvested as of Sunday. That means just over 13 million acres of corn remain in the field, with a winter storm bearing down on northern production areas where harvest is the slowest. North Dakota has harvested just 30% of the corn crop compared to the five-year average of 91%. Michigan, Wisconsin, South Dakota are also well behind the five-year average. Illinois at 88%, Iowa 86% harvested also represent a fair number of bushels still in the field and at risk to storm loss. December corn futures were 3 cents lower, 367.5. March corn fell 2.5 cents to 378.25. May corn closed at 384.25, down 2.25 cents. Chip.
Yeah, saying that North Dakota has just 30% of the corn crop harvested, it might not be as strong as saying there's still 70% of the corn crop in North Dakota in the field on Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they've got a lot of snow coming. It's a mess.
Yep. USDA says 94% of the bean crop was harvested as of November 24. That's well advanced, but still 3 points behind the five-year average pace. The bean market is falling under the weight of timely rains in Brazil, but chart-based selling is also pulling bean prices lower. The negative factors in the bean market are easily overwhelming any positive vibes from progress in U.S.-Chinese trade talks. High-level talks happened this morning, advancing the talks closer to a Phase 1 agreement. January bean futures were 8.25 cents lower, 8.84.25. March beans fell 8.25 to 8.98.75. May beans 9.13.25, down 7.75 cents. Ugh.
It feels like the right group is now having the conversation over Phase 1. Feels mm-hmm. like if it does, I mean, you hate to put a timetable on it, but it feels like we are getting closer to some sort of a, you know, ink on paper.
Mm-hmm. Follow-through buying from yesterday's solid gains in the cattle complex pushed cattle futures higher. Traders warn the premium futures hold to the cash market will likely limit buying interest the rest of the holiday shortened week. December cattle futures were 70 cents higher, 120.40. February cattle futures gained 52.5 to close at 125.67.5. Jan feeders off 35 cents, 141.62.5. And on the snout side, trade in the lean hog market has turned into a consolidation pattern as traders await the next round of pork buys from China. December hogs were 20 cents lower, 60.82.5. Feb hogs up 7.5 cents, 67.82.5. Chip.
All right. Thank you very much, Davis. Let's bring in Joe Vaclavic, Standard Grain. Joe, how are you doing today, buddy? Happy Thanksgiving.
I'm doing good. Happy Thanksgiving.
All right. So what are you thinking here on this bean market? It just feels like it just feels really heavy right now.
Yeah, short term, a lot of things are negative. I mean, I think we were supposed to have a trade deal November 15th, which was 10 days ago, and we don't. So I think that was a negative. There was a story this morning about China buying a whole bunch of new crop soybean cargoes from Brazil, and that should be expected. That's normal. But it's not the greatest headline in the world when traders see that they're buying Brazil beans and not U.S. beans.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And then when you look at this, what's going on in this wheat market, it seems like it's a market that's heavily dominated by fund activity right now. And you got that front month SRW contract that's bumping right up against resistance at the October high.
Did pretty well, I think, compared to the row crops. I know prices in Russia have rallied quite a bit, and I think they had 2 weeks of better closes there. And really, Russia kind of sets the price for the rest of the world now, being that they're the biggest exporter. And I think as long as their market's strong, I think our markets could be a little bit stronger. And they've got some dryness in Russia and the Ukraine. It may be a little bit early to be overly concerned, but I think it's helped to prop up prices a little bit.
All right. So what else are you watching here in their short week?
Cattle market's been very impressive still. I mean, this live cattle thing has just had very, very little correction. I still think a correction there is inevitable at some point in time. When does that happen? I don't know. The other big thing is December corn deliveries. You know, all the longs are going to have to be out of the market by tomorrow's close in order to avoid delivery risk. And a lot of times once you get past that, it opens the door to some upside.
Very good, Joe. Thanks. Once again, happy Thanksgiving. We'll talk to you later.
Yep, you, Chip.
All right, that is Joe Vaclavic, Standard Grain. Coming up next, we've got Craig Turner. Craig is with Daniels Trader, and he's also the publisher of Turner's Tape. That's up next on AgriTalk. Today I'm joined by Steve Gomm, corn herbicide product lead with Syngenta. Steve, purse strings. They may be tight again in 2020, but spending less on herbicide doesn't mean more money in your pocket at the end of the season. How can growers avoid pouring money down the drain when making their corn herbicide decisions?
Yeah, the problems growers are going to encounter by skimping on herbicides next year far outweigh the short-term cost savings they'll be anticipating. And these problems can include application and crop safety issues, poor weed control, resistance spread, and the need for repeat applications. And simply put, as you know, Chip, the most expensive herbicide you can buy is the one that doesn't work.
That is exactly right. So let's talk about some efficiencies out there. What examples have you got?
Yeah, I'll use an example. Actually, just recently, we had a grower in Kansas that wanted to go a cheaper route and use a less effective herbicide.
Okay.
And at the end of the season, the grower had spent over $100 an acre trying to get his weeds under control and had lower yielding corn than his neighbor who had used Acuron in the first place. And so saving money on a cheaper herbicide does not mean saving money in the long run. And that's, you know, one of many examples we've certainly heard this year.
Well, since you mentioned Acuron there, I got a feeling that's what you're recommending for growers in 2020, right?
Yeah, you bet. The best way for growers to protect their fields and maximize their profit in 2020 is using effective herbicides with multiple sites of action, and that's where Acuron comes in. It's proven to increase yields by 5 to 15 bushels when used pre-emergent at full label rates. And this means investing a little more up front, you're going to get back that plus some yield and extra revenue at the end of the season. And from a weed management or agronomic approach, you're going to manage resistance as well. So you can't get it any better.
Yeah, very good. Hey, that yield advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and University trials. Thank you so much, Steve. That is Steve Gomm, the corn herbicide product lead with Syngenta, encouraging you to choose wisely when selecting your next corn herbicide. Just a reminder to always read and follow label instructions. Acuron is a restricted-use corn pesticide.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success, like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
Hi, I'm Ag Day host Clinton Griffiths, and I invite you to join me each morning as we cover the nation's food system, from fields of green to orchards of orange and livestock everywhere in between. America runs on agriculture, and here at Ag Day, agriculture's what we do best. Listen as our analysts track the markets, learn about innovations in technology and sustainability, and live the country lifestyle through the eyes of rural America. Join me, Clinton Griffiths, for Ag Day, the country experience.
Five conferences, one location, something for your entire team. Get ready. The 2020 Top Producer Summit is set for January 27th through the 30th in Chicago. This year's summit is a combination of the five highly regarded top producer conferences: Top Producer Seminar, Executive Women in Agriculture, Tomorrow's Top Producer, Farm Journal Legacy Project, and for the first time, the Farm Journal Hemp Summit. Register today for Top Producer Summit at tpsummit.com.
Hey, Jim, how would you describe our D.C. Signal to Noise podcast?
It's a dairy parlor analysis of the D.C. politics that impact America's farmers and ranchers.
Dairy parlor analysis? What do you mean?
No bull.
Download the D.C. Signal to Noise podcast with Jim Wiesmeyer and me, John Harith, every Friday on agweb.com, the AgriTalk app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This just in from the front lines of the fight against tough weeds in soybean fields. Growers have taken the next step with the ultimate secret weapon: Fierce brand herbicides from Valent USA. These pre-emergence herbicides protect soybean fields with multiple effective modes of action, residual control that lasts up to 8 weeks, and fierce resistance management to help you win the battle against resistant weeds and the war. Ask your retailer or visit valent.com/fierce to learn more. Always read and follow label instructions.
You can't see them, but they're coming for your soybeans. Pythium, Phytophthora, and soybean cyst nematodes are serious threats, and they require serious seed protection. Valent USA has developed a 1-2 punch defense so growers can take the next step in soybean protection. Intego Sweet Soybeans has four powerful modes of action against insects and diseases that work in tandem with Aveo Easy Nematicide to stop soybean pests and diseases before they strike. Find out more at soybeanprotection.com. Always read and follow label instructions.
Do you suffer from talking on the radio phobia? No problem. Send us a tweet at hashtag AgriTalk.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me.
Weather moving in at your place yet?
I was just looking out the window. It's gotten really cloudy. The wind is starting to pick up. Not any precipitation yet. What about you?
Farm Kid making weather is right around the corner, people.
Is it?
So let's get ready. Yes. Get that tractor combine. Get them parked. Get them parked now.
See?
Get ready.
Yeah, right. Right. And see, this morning I told Tony Melanthan on the morning show that that to make sure that he's got fuel in the loader tractor.
Yeah.
You've got other ideas.
That's a good one. Well, yeah, you can fuel up the loader tractor, sure. But, boy, as soon as you see that snow fly. I mean, America needs farm kids now more than ever. Have I mentioned that in the past?
Yes, you have.
The past episodes, perhaps?
Glad that you could all join us today. Corn was lower. Soybeans, solid losses there. Soybean meal and bean oil futures worked to the downside. Wheat futures were lower but well off session lows. Live cattle worked to the upside. Feeder cattle were mixed. Lean hogs, I'm going to call them mixed, but they were mostly firm. The December contract was the only contract that was under a little bit of pressure here. Craig Turner is with Daniels Trading and Turner's Take. He joins us right now. Craig, it is good to talk with you again. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. You bet. Hey, Joe Vaklavic was just making a point about First Notice Day and coming up here at the end of the week. Is that going to have any... cause any gyrations in these markets for those December contracts?
Yeah, it definitely will. When we come into basic delivery periods, especially ones that are centered around like a new crop, when we switch from old crop to new crop, things that are tied to either basis contracts or storage, we do. What makes this period, I think, worse than some of the other months is it gets low volume. So First Notice Day for the December contracts is always black. It seems to be usually Black Friday or right around there. So, you know, we're coming into a low volume week. If you're long, you got to get out. If you have storage contracts, you need to have those priced by either Wednesday or Friday, depending on who you made the deal with. So that always adds some extra pressure. Sometimes it tends to drive the market a little bit lower than it deserves to go, especially in a low holiday volume. And we saw the same thing in like August, late August, early September. We made a seasonal low and then rallied. We also did it in March, which may have to do more with the big report in March. But typically we do see that, and it usually affects corn the most, but it tends to spill over into some of the other contracts.
Right, and what makes this one more difficult to manage is what you were just talking about there, Craig. The low volume, the lack of liquidity that sometimes slips into the market at this time of the year, if you get stuck in a long position and you get delivered on, you're paying storage until you find some way somehow to get out of those long positions and to put that product back out there. And it's just that is something that guys, traders just don't want to mess with that.
Yeah, it is a pain. I mean, you have to retender when that happens. It does happen on occasion, and usually it's an online trader who doesn't realize that they're still long. But but when you do, and it's costly too, like the clearing firms usually charge you anywhere from 2 to 5 cents to reverse the transaction, and you gotta find someone on the other side. So for long-term traders that want to be long the market, that will still want to hold, we usually have a rule here: you need to roll like 2 days before First Notice Day. So if First Notice Day is Friday, Thursday's the holiday, you got to be out by the close on Wednesday. Best practice says get out by the close on Tuesday, which happened a lot today.
Yep, gotcha. Okay, let's talk about. I'm just thinking about what I'm enjoying reading most in Turner's Take right now, and your perspectives on what is happening in the U.S.-China trade talks. I think it's really important, especially on a day like today. After it appears to me anyway, Craig, that the conversation, even though it happened on the phone, the conversation still got ratcheted up a notch today, didn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. One, the players who are involved, right? I mean, that's number one. It's not the low-level talks. It's the Chinese vice president. It's the U.S. Secretary of the Treasury, the United States Trade Representative. So that's a big deal, because you can only get higher. The only way you're getting higher in those talks is if, you know, President Trump, you know, is talking to the Chinese president, yeah. Right? That's the only way that's getting any higher. I do think what's going on here is, you know, from China's perspective, they think, okay, we don't want to pay as much tariffs. We need to buy some of these ag products, particularly pork. And the tariffs are hurting their economy. How do we do this workaround to solve our problems? And that is really what, and if you ask me, I think they're winning a little bit on the phase one deal. And then, you know, the reluctance for the United States to really jump in is what they want on phase two, because the whole reason, you can make an argument, the whole reason we've had this trade war really could be IP protection, right?
Right.
And, you know, and they really want that. And, you know, you see these rumors or stories out that China's really not interested in talking about phase two, but the United States wants to get phase one done so they can get phase two started.
Yeah.
And I think when you see these headlines today saying, hey, let's now talk about the core issues that are preventing phase one, it just sounds like to me that maybe some things from phase two need to be included in phase one to get this done. That's
yeah,
what I think, but we'll see what happens.
Doesn't it feel like the stuff that they're trying to clear up in phase one is the stuff that got caught in the crossfire of this trade war? And
yeah.
The real guts of it is in phase two.
Yeah, it really is. And it seems like, you know, and there are political wins for both sides in phase one. I mean, China really could use pork. I mean, that's a well-known, that is well-known, right? And also, the tariffs are hurting their economy. You look at the United States stock market and economy, it's been growing, and we've had new highs since this trade war started. Meanwhile, China is still 10 or 15% lower in their stock market, and their economic growth is worse than it was. You can see companies leaving China and going to the country. These businesses are leaving China and setting up shop right around them to get around basically the tariffs. You know, the whole reason the United States is putting these tariffs on is because of the IP protection. That really is the main driver here. So I don't know. What I see happening here is China agrees to some kind of strengthening of IP laws, but the question's going to be is when. Like some of these were saying, hey, we're going to start in 22 and it'll be all phased in by 2025. That's probably too long for the United States, and somewhere they're going to probably find an agreement on some kind of structure.
Right, right. Okay. If we get a phase one agreement, are we going to know it from what happens in the grain markets?
What do you mean exactly?
Is there going to be much of a price reaction?
So China wants to buy what they need, right? And the United States is going to come in and say, you know, you're going to probably have to hit quotas. That's probably going to be one of the deals. I think we will see price reaction in pork. I think we'll see price reaction in soybeans. Like right now, funds got, long, about 40, 50,000 contracts of beans, thinking that deal was going to get done in Chile. And now that it hasn't, they're getting flat. I don't think they're getting short, but I do think they're getting flat. And I don't think their minds are going to change on that until they actually see that this thing is about to be signed.
Okay.
I wouldn't be surprised when we see commitment of traders on Friday. We're not going to be pretty close. I mean, with beans getting to 880, we're there. But, you know, if that deal gets signed and China does have to buy it, I see that price reaction too. Cotton would benefit along with hogs and soybeans.
All right. And once the funds get to a flat position in soybeans, then it becomes what? A question of continued progress or lack thereof of a trade deal with China, and of course the Brazilian weather, right?
Right. Well, that's interesting too. The Brazilian weather can always come up and bite you. They're not going to want to get heavily short soybeans until a crop is made. You know, they're not going to want to get short soybeans when they know at any one time we can have an announcement of the United States and China doing a trade deal. I just think they don't want to be long right now, and that's the room for the selling pressure. You know, we've also seen a lot of selling pressure because of really the currency between Brazil and U.S. too. And, you know, that may be adding to things also.
Yeah, it just feels like, and we've talked about it a couple of times on AgriTalk already, Craig, but, boy, if they're putting bean seed in the ground, they're turning around and hedging it about as quick as they can right now, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. And, you know, the thing is, the you know, that currency is now, 4.25 to the dollar. That is that's a five-year low for that currency. And Brazilian farmers are getting five-year highs on soybean prices and close to it on corn. you know, the Brazilian farmers see that, and they also see the United States and China talking. So I would think, I mean, if it were me, I'd be doing the same. Like, for everything you're planting, you're hedging, because how much better can you get going forward?
Yeah, exactly. And with the kind of risk that they know they may face, I mean, they face a different kind of risk, and that is that if we do get a trade deal done with China, and if it does include major purchases of U.S. ag products, soybeans are going to be on that list, and all of a sudden, they're on the outside looking in at a market with no tariffs on U.S. beans. So they're walking a balancing act there, too. Craig, when we come back, let's talk next year's corn and soybean crops. 2020 production potential up next on AgriTalk.
A lot of things made this game possible. Practice, good weather, hot dog vendors, and believe it or not, crop nutrition. Smart crop nutrition, to be exact. For one person here, that's what made it possible to be at this game and to lose themselves in it. It came from Micro Essentials, a phosphate fertilizer from the Mosaic Company. It uses fusion technology to make a perfectly balanced granule that delivers season-long sulfur availability and uniform nutrient distribution. Every single plant in your field gets the ideal nourishment all season long. That means a healthier crop and higher yields. And it means a sense of security. A sense that things are going okay. And when you have that, you can have little moments like this too. Experience your own with Micro Essentials. Talk to your retailer or visit microessentials.com to learn more.
It's time for AgriTalk's Tech Talk. Pro Farmer Senior Economist Dan Vaught is out of the office, so I get to pick the market move that really matters. And since we're coming up on the time of the year that we always sold calves at Flory Farms, let's take a look at the feeder cattle market. January feeder cattle have been under significant pressure since topping at 147.77.5 on November 12th. Following an $8.5 drop to the November 22nd low, feeders have recovered about one-third of the price slide. January feeders experienced some heavy consolidation between 140 and 143 back in October, and the return to that price range after some volatile trade in November certainly suggests front month calf prices are staging for the next trending move. It will take a close over yesterday's high at 143.30 to reopen upside price potential, but when that happens, look for a quick move back to 146 in Jan feeders. Pro Farmer members, get your daily advice updates at profarmer.com.
This is Brian Grady, Pro Farmer editor and AgriTalk market analyst, inviting you to get more insight on today's market movers and what to watch tomorrow with Pro Farmer. When you visit profarmer.com/radio, we'll give you 1 month of premium analysis and advice absolutely free. You'll get the perfect blend of the marketing and policy information you need for your farming operation without feeling overwhelmed. Plus, we'll text you when breaking market advice is issued so you never miss a marketing opportunity. Visit profarmer.com/radio to start today. Unbiased and free of advertisements, you'll get our detailed, time-tested advice for cash marketers and futures and options users, along with our premium analysis to give you the information that you need. Visit profarmer.com/radio right now to start your free month. It's fast and easy to start, and there's no long-term commitment.
For the first time ever, Hemp College will be co-hosted with AgTech Expo, and Indianapolis will be the one location for both technology and hemp production. The Hemp College panel of experts will cover a variety of topics focused on agronomics and marketing of industrial hemp. Then switch into AgTech Expo with more than 25 educational breakout sessions covering precision ag, usable data, machinery demos, sustainable technology, and more. Sign up for both events now at farmjournalagtech.com.
I'm Andrew McRae, your host for Farming the Countryside. We're talking about issues, tips, and trends affecting rural and agricultural America.
Then it was a burden on the local office. Essentially, you just have Arc County right now, or PLC.
On each show, I talk with guests who provide the latest info on important topics and the challenges and successes on their own operations.
We had an open house and invited the entire community. It was a huge event. We had about 750 people show up.
The Farming the Countryside podcast is brought to you by Nutrient Ag Solutions, the world's largest provider of crop inputs and services.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
Rush.
Do you see what you're doing? I mean, we've got such a fine, young, upstanding farmer in Tony Melanthan.
Yes.
Willing to come on the show, and you have absolutely corrupted him.
That's what happens. That's what I do. It makes great radio.
You think it does?
It keeps people tuning in. Actually, I can't confirm that. I might just be talking into a microphone, like, and I'm only the one hearing it, you know, type of deal.
Yeah.
It's possible.
That could be. So anyway, yeah, Tony's accepted your challenge. Before we get back to the conversation with Craig Turner from Daniels Trading and Turner's Take, let's go ahead and recap how the markets closed.
Well, tip, December hard red futures were 3 cents lower at 432.5. December soft red futures slipped 0.75 cents to 530.25. December corn futures were 3 cents lower, 367.5. March corn fell 2.5 cents to 378.25. January bean futures 8.25 cents lower, 884.25. March beans fell 8.25 to 898.75, just a shade under $9 in the March. December cattle futures 70 cents higher, 120.40. January feeders slipped 35 cents, 141.62.5. December hogs were 20 cents lower at 60.82.5. Now this.
You ever look up there at all them stars and see an agri-talk?
Good. Clam here and eat it. We'll all be agri-talk.
There's your quick market recap. Now back to you.
Thank you, fellas. Appreciate that. Wow. All right.
The agri-talk theatrical players.
Yes, Craig Turner, Turner's Take, Daniels Trading is our guest today. We covered a lot of ground in the last segment there, Craig, but I want to turn the page and head out to 2020 when it comes to how much we're going to stick in the ground. What's the balance sheet going to look like for the 2020-21 marketing year? And you go back to this summer, Craig, and it felt like a high 90, maybe even 100 million acres of corn was a possibility. But since that time, market conditions have definitely changed. There may be some out there that are still thinking we're going to see high 90 million acre range on corn. But what are you guys thinking? Where do you think we're going to end up on corn plantings?
Okay, so the first thing we usually do is we kind of combine soybean and corn. And for the past couple of years, it's been about 178 million acres. And then from there, what we do is, you know, we try to figure out, between that number, where are we going to land on both? So when you look at what we need for soybeans, we have to have at least 84 million acres of soybeans with a trend line yield just to basically use as much as we grow, right? Yep. And with soybean prices, hopefully with a China deal, you need probably at least 84, maybe 85 million acres. Otherwise, the market's going to really start pricing, you know, incentive the farmer to plant soybeans. So we think where we start is soybeans, because we really think it's got to be an 84, 85 million acres. Otherwise, the market's going to take off and it's going to force farmers to plant, which means with 178 million acres, corn's got to be 93 to 94 million. So we see corn at 93 million acres here, and with a trend line yield, which would be around 178.5, just using our normal, you know, demand numbers year over year, nothing too fancy either way. We're looking at a carryout possibly of 2.5 billion or higher for 2020-21 on the corn market.
Okay. What was that carryover number again? I'm writing it down.
2.5. It'd be north of 2.5. So 93 million acres. I mean, you never know what's going to get harvested, but it's usually 92%. You add in that 80, you add in that trend line yield, about 178.5. You get 2.5 billion. And the thing is, these 20 corn right now is trading right around 393. So, you know, 393 with these next year, that's a lot of carry built into the market and expectations. I mean, if we are at 2.5 billion this time next year, we could be in the low threes. You know, we could be 320, 330, 340. You know, really exactly this time next year as we head into first notice day for DEES 2020. So, you know, we've been getting aggressive with the 2020 crop, you know, at $4. And honestly, a lot of farmers who have storage, you know, that March 21, you know, if it's at 405, I think it's at 407 last I checked, or 405, it gets to 410. If you're going to harvest it and store it for a while, there is incentive, you know, to sell, you know, to sell. And I know in my newsletter and Turner's Take podcast, we're about 50% sold right now for 2020 just because of, or hedged just because of those carryout numbers.
That is fairly aggressive, having half of your your 20 crop, anticipated crop, already sold. Are you that far on 2019 crop, Craig?
Our 2019, we got really aggressive over the summer. We're about 80%. Okay. We're at about 80%, and with most, with just over like a $4 average on it. Okay. And you know, we'll see for right here. We can always use the futures and options market to get back in, but it just I don't know. We'll see.
Okay, so what was the strategy of choice on the 2020 to get to half done?
Okay, so when we did that, we sold about 30% futures, and it was around, it's around prices between 410 and 420 when we were doing it. The last 20%, we were able to buy, and this was back when corn was a little bit higher, but we were able to buy $4 puts for 20 cents, locking in 380. And so, you know, basically on the future side, we're sold, you know, and that's going to be tick for tick going up and down either way. The last 20%, because you're absolutely right, getting more than 20 or 30% aggressive sold this time of year is aggressive, and that's why we start doing things on the put side. But, you know, you sometimes just got to go with it. When you see these prices and you look at the you just look at the trends and, you know, and what the carryout's going to be, you know, as long as I've been doing this, we've never been this aggressive on selling one new crop. We're usually 50% new crop heading into the year. Now we're 80%. And I'm really 25 to 30% of the next year, in this case, the 2021. This is the first time we've ever been over that. But it's just sometimes the writing's on the wall a little bit. And unless we get some kind of either major issue with weather, it's just going to be difficult for corn to rally here.
Yeah, weather's your biggest risk on this. Is that how you see it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely, 100% the weather's the risk. So that's why we did the 20% of the options. I mean, we are, you know, for the 30% that are done in the futures, you know, you got to be comfortable with being short, you know, from right around 410. But, and I also like doing anyone who, if you didn't have storage, we were doing December 20 around 410. If you did have storage, if you do plan to store some of these bushels, we were doing March 21 just because they were generally about 10 cents higher.
Okay. All right. So trying to get a bin payment out of that, out of your bin and capture the carry that is in the market. On soybeans, what are you thinking then as far as risk management on soybeans for 2020 crop?
I'm more bullish on soybeans. I think we have one sale at 10% at 950, and that is it. You know, 85 million acres and a trend line yield is what we have projected now, and that gives a carryout of 500 million. And while that's not great, that's still very supportive of beans in the mid to high eights, right? Because if you get any kind of weather issues, if we start talking about the yield coming down, let's just say, you know, two bushels, you know, then all of a sudden we're flirting with 350 to 300 million carryout. Plus, based on the USDA and the numbers that we use, we always use the USDA assumptions, they're not going to start factoring in, you know, any kind of a China deal until that's actually inked and signed. So they won't speculate on, you know, exports coming up. If exports do come up because of a U.S.-China deal from, let's say, you know, 1.8 billion to 2 billion again, or something like that, you know, then all of a sudden soybeans get really tight, right? Yep. So, you know, I'm much more bullish in the long term soybeans. I think if we go 85 million acres in beans and get a trend line yield with weather issues and I get a China deal, you know, we could see summer rallies that could be challenging $10 in soybeans in that kind of scenario.
Okay. All right. Hogs. Spring at $80, summer hogs at $85, $86. seems like everybody that I talk to right now, Craig says, listen, if that price works for you, go ahead and lock it in, but do it in such a way that'll leave upside potential open because of the potential Chinese buying.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, I mean, it makes a ton of sense to me. I don't see how we tend to do – that's how I tend to do things in soybeans too. And same with the hog market, because the thing is China can come in if they choose to. If this deal goes down, they can come in huge numbers and buy from us. And honestly, the limit's just going to be logistics of being able to get even the meat over there. It's a lot easier to transport, you know, grain in bulk than it is, you know, meat in cold storage, right? Yeah. So, you know, we could go up – we could go up another 10, 15, 20 points if China gets real serious buying U.S. pork. But those prices, especially in the summer months, are very high. So, and you never, and this can all fall apart too. So we use puts and put spreads when hedging the hog market right now. Kind of stay away from futures. I really don't like selling calls.
Gotcha. All right. And then I'm going to give you 20 seconds. Go ahead and hit cattle. What do you want to do?
Cattle, it's going to be supportive here. The futures prices are kind of high relative to cash, but packers are maybe $300 ahead on the profit margin.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So I think you got to start hedging a little bit, but we do see the cattle market being supportive here for a while.
Craig, it is always fun talking with you. Thank you so much, and you guys have a great Thanksgiving, okay?
You too. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
All right, that is Craig Turner, Turner's Take, Daniel's Trading. I tell you, he always has a list of things that he wants to get through, and it's worth the listen, no doubt about that. Davis and I will wrap it up next.
Save time and capitalize on market opportunities with Pro Farmer's Daily Advice Monitor. Whether on your desktop or on your phone, visit tryprofarmer.com and get a generous one-month free trial. Pro Farmer only focuses on the news that impacts the market, so you won't scroll through pages of articles to find what's really impacting your business. Plus, get full access to cash bids, charting tools, and more. Visit tryprofarmer.com right now. That's tryprofarmer.com.
Five conferences, one location, something for your entire team. Get ready. The 2020 Top Producer Summit is set for January 27th through the 30th in Chicago. This year's summit is a combination of the five highly regarded top producer conferences, Top Producer Seminar, Executive Women in Agriculture, Tomorrow's Top Producer, Farm Journal Legacy Project, and, for the first time, the Farm Journal Hemp Summit. Register today for Top Producer Summit at tpsummit.com.
I'm Zach Johnson, a row crop farmer in Minnesota.
And I'm Mitchell Hora, a farmer in Iowa.
Agriculture has to feed a growing population, and many people want us to pull that off without messing up the environment. So how do we do that?
We're trying to figure that out on our podcast, Fieldwork. Check us out on the AgriTalk app and learn more at fieldworktalk.org.
Hi, I'm Ag Day host Clinton Griffiths, and I invite you to join me each morning as we cover the nation's food system, from fields of green to orchards of orange and livestock everywhere in between. America runs on agriculture, and here at Ag Day, agriculture's what we do best. Listen as our analysts track the markets, learn about innovations in technology and sustainability, and live the country lifestyle through the eyes of rural America. Join me, Clinton Griffiths, for Ag Day, the country experience.
Pivot BioProven is the first ever nitrogen-producing microbe that supplies nitrogen directly to the plant, helping maximize yield. Just ask Zach from Oklahoma.
The average was about a 5 to 6 bushel an acre benefit. Not only is that more money in my pocket, but it's less money I had to spend on fertilizer and wear and tear on my side dressing sprayer.
Pivot BioProven. Get what you paid for. The nitrogen that stays put, whether or not.
We're saying thank you to our producers. Head on out to your local Titan Machinery location December 2nd through the 7th for the best savings of the year on everything from filters, oil and fluids, to shovels and coulters. Visit titanmachinery.com/customer appreciation for more information about the discounts available on genuine Case IH parts beginning December 2nd. Stock up and save. Titan Machinery, power and precision to grow. Learn more at titanmachinery.com.
Sometimes life is wonderful, and sometimes it's not. Cherish the good, but always be prepared for life's challenges. At Private Healthcare, we provide the peace of mind you deserve. With Private Healthcare, you'll get the coverage you want and healthcare you need. If your employer doesn't supply healthcare coverage and you don't qualify for Medicare or Medicaid, you need to give us a call right now. Private Healthcare is private health insurance for ages 65 and under with medical, dental, vision, and even prescription coverage. When life comes at you unexpectedly, you need to be ready, and health insurance is your financial safety net. If you're looking for health coverage at the best price and your annual household income is $35,000 or more, give us a call at 800-626-4910. That's 800-626-4910. 800-626-4910.
Are you over 50? Would you like to get up to 33% more income in retirement? Then call now for this free book, Annuity Do's and Don'ts for Baby Boomers, from a leading financial firm on maximizing your income in retirement. That's right, free. This free book reveals little-known truths about annuities in simple-to-understand terms that will help you make the right choices before buying an annuity. And it's free. As a bonus, we'll also throw in a free annuity rate report summarizing the rates and benefits from financially strong insurers.
Call 800-806-9013.
That's right, annuity do's and don'ts for baby boomers and annuity rate report, both absolutely free for calling today.
Call 800-806-9013. That's 800-806-9013.
Producers have the appropriate licenses for the products they offer. Increased income is possible using strategies suited to your goals and may require buying multiple annuities and holding them full term.
The truth is hard to come by these days unless you listen to AgriTalk.
Yeah, the storm is coming in. Have you noticed? Have you looked at the radar?
I haven't looked.
Yeah.
But maybe it's time I did. I don't know.
I don't know. You know, Nebraska has been covered up.
Has it?
Has been covered up for a lot of the day. And we're starting to see the definition, where the line is between the snow and the rain and freezing rain.
Uh-huh.
And that line is in southeast Nebraska right now, kind of running up through Omaha and then up into the Decorah, Iowa area. But, boy, north and east of that line heading into the overnight is expected to get a little ugly.
Okay.
A little ugly. Yeah.
All right.
Okay, so 178 acres combined, corn and soybeans, is what Craig Turner was just talking about. And that's basically where he's, well, not basically, that is where they're at. I mean, you're at 85 million acres of soybeans is where he kind of thinks we need to be for a 500 million bushel carry. Which means that you're looking at 93 million acres over time, over the winter. The market sort all that out, price it all out, put the right incentives here, the right incentives there to go ahead and square it up, get those 93 million acres of corn, 85 million acres of beans, and you end up at 178. You know how many we had planted in 2019?
183.
No. 166.4.
Really?
Yeah. 89.9 million acres of corn and 76.5 million acres of beans. Now, intentions were somewhere way north of that. And some of the plantings that are included in this are questionable at best because were they planted for a cover crop? Was it planted for a forage? Was it planted for blah, 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 blah?
In there you go, Ted.
Ugly. Yeah. There you go, Ted. Was planted for whatever reason in that the spring of 2019. It just kind of makes everything really, really difficult to sort out. So that 178 number is, that's my number two. I've always, for the last few years, I've been working with a 178 combined corn and soybean number. I would sure like to get off of that. I would sure like to see it be a 176, 175, something like that. But for it to happen, it means that we're going to need a viable third crop option in corn and soybean country. Now, with as terrible as the sugar beet crop was this year, Red River Valley could steal a few acres away from soybeans, a few acres away from corn, and move some into beets for 2020. But if you're not a beet grower, you're not going to become a beet grower because it takes some gearing up. It's kind of like cotton. Not as bad as cotton, I don't think. Maybe it is. Maybe it is. But if you're not a beet grower, the odds of you becoming a beet grower in 2020 are pretty low.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't see a whole lot of movement there. So let's talk cotton. Is cotton going to take anything away from corn or soybeans and compete for those acres? Well, yeah, you got Dease 20 cotton futures at 67.80. The answer to that is no.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, cotton is not competing for acres for 2020. You know, is hemp the answer, Davis?
Geez, I don't know.
No, I mean it's going to take some acres but it's I just don't see any way that it consumes enough acres at like any point in the future that it's going to quote unquote compete for acres with corn and soybeans.
Right.
So
we
need something else, right? We need something else. And I'm not exactly sure what it is, but it's either that or what else do we need? More demand. If we can find a way to get that demand back, to get back to, you know, geez, do we call just getting back to where we were at one time with China a win? Well, at this point, I think I would take it.
I think, yeah, probably.
Yeah. Yeah, at least on soybean trade. Now, getting back to where we were with China does not mean stopping short and pulling up short on making progress on the copyright issues, the property rights issues. That has got to happen at some point. I think it will, and I think it'll happen in phase two. But on this phase one portion of the U.S.-China trade talk agreements. I just get me back to where we were on ag products, and then let the demand that seems to be developing in China and other Asian countries continue to develop to increase demand for soybeans in particular, soybean meal.
Mm-hmm.
But as you've got, like we were talking about with Don Close this morning from Rabo AgriFinance, the Chinese hog industry is going to recover. It's going to take time, but it will recover, and it will modernize in the recovery, which means a ration that doesn't include table scraps and includes corn and soybean meal.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, I got to wonder, too, once we get – let's just – look ahead. Let's say we get phase one locked in.
Yeah.
They're going to buy, you know, 50 bajillion whatevers of whatever.
Okay.
Trade talks break down halfway through phase two. And all of a sudden they decide, well, the market timing isn't quite right for us to make any soybean purchases right now. And we go through 6 months of dry spell.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't like
everything
it.
Because everything coming out of South America is cheaper right now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, that is a definite risk. And if the every day that we move forward with Brazil getting enough rain moves us closer to that kind of a scenario.
We're down to hoping for bad weather in South America, Chip.
Tweet of the day.
Today's tweets are brought to you by Life in the House, because you can't spend all of your time making farm kids.
Are we?
And now today's tweets. At Smith Ag Conrad, I'm going to watch Star Wars, pretend the kids are asleep, and fantasize about being cool. If you're coming over, I'm out of popcorn, he says. At DFaber84, Frozen 2 comes out, and a snowstorm blankets the country. Either Elsa has serious powers or God has a sense of humor. And finally, at Silage Chopper, I hate getting too much done. Now back to you.
Right. Okay. Very good. Thank you, Davis.
You bet.
For Davis and for producer Joe Stackler, thank you for listening today. Thanks to Joe Baklevic, Craig Turner. Tomorrow morning, Dr. Frank Mintlerner. And tomorrow afternoon, me and Davis will take you into the Thanksgiving holiday.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success. Like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds.
Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
For the first time ever, Hemp College will be co-hosted with AgTech Expo, and Indianapolis will be the one location for both technology and hemp production. The Hemp College panel of experts will cover a variety of topics focused on agronomics and marketing of industrial hemp. Then switch into AgTech Expo with more than 25 educational breakout sessions covering precision ag, usable data, machinery demos, sustainable technology, and more. Sign up for both events now at farmjournalagtech.com.
Thanks to Acuron Corn Herbicide for sponsoring the AgriTalk podcast. Talk to your retailer about how you can get 5 to 15 more bushels with Acuron. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron Yield Advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and University trials.